It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
Welcome to this week's episode of Firearm Friday. I am Chris Dover, and today we're going to be talking with Johnny Bragg, better known to many as maybe Gun Drama Johnny or Hill Person Johnny. We're going to cover several things today, from the life of Johnny to the projects he has going on. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about holsters. Now, if you everyday carry, then you know full well that a holster is a very important part of your gear. You want a quality holster, you want a good fit, you want something that's comfortable. And for that, I recommend that you jump over and check out some of the things that Celtic Holsters has to offer. Now, Scott and the crew over there have been doing this for a while. They do quality work, they use quality materials, and they produce a quality product. So jump over there on CelticHolsters.com and see if they have something that might suit your needs. All right, crew, we've got Johnny on the line. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet, man. I'm happy you could make it. I guess we've had a long conversation. I think we've run into each other the last couple of years, but
yeah, a couple of years at the NRAM, and we talk online a little bit. We talk on the direct message on the Instagrams, but this is the first time we've ever done one of these, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, because it gives a chance. Obviously, as we run through this, if you have any questions, for me, fire them out there, man. By all means, I'm pretty much an open book. I've been like a lot of people. I didn't grow up, obviously. I grew up in the age of Scooby-Doo and Smurfs and Nintendo, but I'm used to the social medias nowadays, so a lot of my life is out there online anyway. So what difference does it make?
Totally.
But as far as you, I want to get into a little bit about your background. Did you grow up around firearms? I'm always interested. If I can quit.
Yeah, I did. I grew up in the South, mm-hmm. So everybody in the South grew up around firearms. In my experience, I said this on a podcast the other night on another channel, that I owned firearms literally before I was born.
Yeah.
And so, nice. I mean, like, for me, guns have just always been there. Like, there is literally, at my parents' house growing up, a gun cabinet next to the kitchen table, just stacked full of 22s and shotguns and pretty typical stuff for the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And then I inherited all of Pawpaw's guns and Granddaddy's guns, and those things start coming down, and I just absolutely love it. And at my age now, in my 40s, not everything interests me the way it used to, and guns still do. They really hold my attention. I love it. I love going to the range. Some people look at them as a tool. For me, they are a tool, but they're just like one of my favorite hobbies of all time. So, yeah, I grew up around them, and today I still love them.
Right. And, that's a valid point. A lot of people get into the self-defense aspect of things, right? And then there's those that are into the shooting sports. There's those that are into the collectability and see them almost as a work of art. Or they're intrigued by the mechanics and the design and things like that. So, there's kind of room for everybody in the community and the culture, right?
Yeah, there is. And I think some guys go too far in one direction, maybe, like, and that's just kind of dudes. Dudes get too into one thing, and that's kind of a standard thing. I was talking to a Dungeons & Dragons guy last night, and some of those guys, they get a little too into it and, like, start wearing their magic hats in out in public. And I think gun guys do the same. Like, maybe we go too far in one category or another. All of it's valid. Like, I've got no problem with the collectors, and I collect myself. I love World War II guns. I've got no problem with the guys that like to tinker and the gunsmiths. For me, I like dabbling in most of it. I don't do any distance shooting, just because here in the hills in Tennessee, we don't have a lot of space. It doesn't interest me all that much, Clover. But then, on the other hand, I just like going to the range and just shooting. Like whenever I can get to the range and not take a tripod and not take a microphone and not take a camera, I really still enjoy it. It does not feel like work to me.
Yeah, and that's sometimes that's hard to do when you're playing around in a social media space. Yep. Hard to have that off-camera time. I know several people that do that. I mean, they tell me they'll go to the range and go to film their videos or whatever, and they always set aside 10 or 15 minutes that they just turn the cameras off, kind of kick back, relax, do their thing, and have fun.
Yeah, and it's a game changer because I think, unfortunately, I mean, what I get to do is a lot of fun, and I know what you get to do is a lot of fun in the gun world, but on some level it is work, and it is just really, really nice not to have to work and just get to enjoy pinging steel. I've got a pretty good pistol range set up on some private property here, and I can go out to 100 yards with all steel targets. And that's a lot of fun with a pistol to like really like, because you know you can stand at 10 yards and ping steel with a timer all day, whoop-de-doo. But to go 75 yards with a 9mm and get that target to ping, that really is, that's a good night. It doesn't look that great on video, but it really is a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. If anybody's out there, they haven't had the pleasure of shooting steel. Man, that's a game changer. And reactive steel is even better. I mean, the knock over and flip over targets and things like that. Whole lot of fun.
Yeah, I was telling a friend of mine, I took him out the other night. He had never shot steel before. And I took him out to my range. And I told him, when we were getting out of the car, I said, dude, you are literally about to be ruined. Like, you're 40 years old, and you are going to be ruined right now. Because once you start shooting targets that either react or that you can hear, or it you called it a game changer a minute ago. I mean, I call it a life changer. Like, you can't go back to shooting paper ever again, because it really does change the experience. I mean, I encourage anybody that's got a place to shoot at their house, buy a nice piece of steel and just enjoy it. I don't sell steel. I'm not like some big proponent of it. I just think it's fun on a Saturday afternoon.
Right. Yeah, about the only time I use paper anymore is if I'm obviously I reload, and so if I'm working on a pet load or something like that, or if I'm sighting in a rifle, a new optic or something along that lines, I'll use paper. But outside of that, yeah, for me it's steel all day every day.
Yeah, I do a little bit of paper shooting. Like, I'm getting ready to test. The Valkyrie came out about a year ago, or January a year ago, and it wasn't dialed in right. And I'm not a nuance guy. I don't like chasing nuances or numbers, but I got one. Mm-hmm. But now Palmetto State sent me another one, the one that's been revamped, and I think it's a different barrel twist. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a different barrel twist. Trying to get right. That 224 Valkyrie dialed in, and so I've got one of each. And so this week, if the weather can hold off, I'm going to be going out shooting paper at 100 yards only. I'm not going past 100. I think that's far enough back to really get some data. So I'm going to be shooting paper on that. But that's for a specific purpose. I would never go shoot paper. Like, my local range, the one I'm a member of, you have to shoot paper there. And it's kind of, it's no fun. But yeah, it does, like what you said with the reloads, it does serve a purpose for the science guys and the testing guys. But for a Sunday afternoon, I'm going to give it a big no.
Yep, exactly. Now, the follow-up, I guess, to your background with firearms, this is part of what, I'm sure you've probably seen my hashtags with FUD Life and stuff like that, and it's sort of where that came from, is I'm the same way. I can't remember the first time that, the first, people ask all the time, what was the first firearm you shot? Heck, I don't remember. I was probably 3 or something, or 4. I don't remember. And the person that, sadly, that could tell me that has passed away, and I never thought to ask. I can remember some of the first, but I couldn't be for sure that it was the first. So, like you, I mean, I've been around it all my life. But the follow-up to that is always, when did the Second Amendment become an awareness for you?
That's a great question. I don't know if it ever has. Like, I don't have some distinction between owning guns and shooting guns and then having to think about the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. I live in a free state, and it's not something I deal with on a regular basis. If I want to strap an AR to my back and go down to the gas station, I can. Mm-hmm. Not going to, because I'm not a douche, but it's not some big, giant fight. Like, I've never had to worry about my rights. and I know that's probably, it's not white privilege, it's probably two-way privilege. Right. But on some level, I don't know. I don't think it's ever become some big awareness. Now, am I aware? Of course. Am I mindful? Yeah. I do a ton of podcasts. I do a lot of, I hope to say, a lot of good in the gun community, mm-hmm. Promoting two-way rights and promoting firearms awareness. But as far as a moment, no, I don't think it's ever like been a life-changing event where I went from a gun owner to a two-way awareness guy. I just think guns are part of our American culture, and I'm thankful for it.
And I think that's sort of where I come down to, I think. I think if you grow up around it, you see the Second Amendment, and you don't really have like some people, I guess, that would live in a less free state, maybe a more liberal state, and they get invited to a range, they experience, you know, shooting guns for the first time, and then they start, they have that realization of the Second Amendment and what it's about. And I guess that if you're exposed to that, you just don't really have that aha moment, which is not a bad thing. I was always aware of the Second Amendment, and so it was really easy being around that my whole life to make that connection. As far as, because you do, I mean, much like me, you live in a fairly free state there. At what point ever, or was that also something that you really didn't pay a bunch of attention to? At what point did you start to realize that you did live in a more free state, that there were other states out there that were doing these off-the-wall goofy things?
I think it comes back to childhood. Like, I can't ever remember a moment not knowing that the South is better than the North. And yeah, I just said that. Like yeah. I can, you know, 4 or 5 years old, my parents always talking about, like, we have somebody come to church and my parents would say, oh, they're really nice, but they're a Yankee. And I can remember, like, Mama, what's a Yankee? One time I was probably 7, 8 years old enough to remember. And I was riding around in the back of my mom's car, and this older guy at church had called Mom and said, hey, can you give me a ride? And he was kind of a friend of the family, and he didn't have a car. So she went and picked this old man up, and he was like, ma'am, you need to turn here. You need to turn there. And it was, like, just really abrasive and matter-of-fact. Mm-hmm. And after he got out of the car, after spending an hour with the guy, I can remember saying, Mama, why was he like that? Why was he so mean? She goes, oh, he's just a Yankee. And that doesn't mean that all Yankees are like that, but my ears had never heard somebody talking matter-of-factly. Mm-hmm. like in the Deep South, you gotta apologize for everything. Like, ma'am, if it's not too much trouble, can you pick me up? I'm so sorry to hassle you. Whereas this guy was like, I need a ride at 9 p.m. thanks. And that thanks at the end is enough for all politeness. So to answer your question, you know, when did I realize I was in a free state? I've always known that Tennessee is superior. Mm-hmm. And I stand by that statement.
Right. Awesome. That's awesome. It's and bless his heart, right?
He could Yankee heart. He needs to go back where he came from.
He couldn't help it. Bless his heart.
And he didn't mean anything by it. And I lived in Clover. I lived in New England for 3 years as an adult. I worked up there. Uh-huh. And I end up learning, like, the communication patterns are different. Polite, what is considered polite is just different. Mm-hmm. If you say thanks at the end of the sentence, I mean, you are polite. You don't have to sugarcoat everything. I kind of like the South, where we beat around the bush. Like, if I call Dad and say, hey, Dad, where do you want to go to eat? I know where he wants to eat. He wants to go to La Carreta and eat Mexican. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to say that because he's a Southerner. He will always defer. Oh, son, I don't care. Wherever you want to go. And then he'll say it. We could go to La Carreta, but anywhere you want to go. And so I always mess with him. He doesn't know I do this. But I was like, okay, well, La Carreta sounds good. We could go down and get some Chinese buffet. Well, that sounds really good. but we could have La Carreta if that works for you. And so you always have this politeness dance. And I see it on the range, too. Like, I'll pass Dad a gun, and I literally have to tell him verbally, and we've been shooting for 30 years together, I would have to tell him, finish the mag. Like, he'll shoot like 3 or 4. I don't want to waste your ammo, son. Like, Dad, I didn't buy this ammo. A company sent it to me. Burn it up. It's not my ammo. And I end up having to lie to him. Welcome to the South. It's what we do. Right. I end up having to lie to him and tell him it's not my ammo just so he'll have fun and burn magazines. Mm-hmm. Welcome. That's what we do. But God bless the South. Glad to be here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, when did When did the whole social media thing start for you? And what was there motivation or inspiration behind that, or did it just happen?
Well, I mean, the genesis, and some kid, the kids listening today, they're going to have to, like get on some Wikipedia. I'm an early adopter. I love adopting stuff early.
All right.
I can remember the very first time I got on a website in the 90s, the university, I was sitting in the computer lab at the university, and I got onto K2 Ski's website and snow skis, and I had to call the computer lab guy over to tell me what to do, because I didn't know you're supposed to like click stuff. And so that was one of my first, that was my first day on the internet. But from there, like, I was always in the AOL chat rooms, and I was really active in my local church Bible study. And so I was in some Christian chat rooms talking about the Lord and talking about music. I always was in music chat rooms. So that was, you know, that's not quote unquote social media, but that was the genesis of connecting with total strangers online. And I ended up meeting people offline that I had met online, and that was just like unheard of. Also at East Tennessee State, where I went, they had a early, I mean, we're talking, it was on a DOS system. They had a chat system set up where you could talk to other computers on campus. And so it was really, really active. And so I would sit down at the computer lab for hours and hours just chatting with people across campus. So that for me was the genesis. I got in on Facebook really, really early. And for me, it was had nothing to do with guns. It was all about comedy. And there weren't memes back then, but it was still funny pictures from the internet. And I love Reddit. I'm on Reddit all the time. And so I like social media. I did Twitter for years, and I'm totally 100% off Twitter right now. But I love social media. I think it's a good tool. I think it's a lot of fun. And it's a complete, Clover, it is a complete waste of time.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, it really is. Now, at some point, you did get a little more serious about it, apparently.
Well, I did move. I moved from personal stuff when I got serious about YouTube. You know, I created social media accounts for that. But, I mean, this is, on some level, a lot of levels it's fun. But on some level it's a business. And so you just have to have these accounts going. You know, 480-second ideas. I've got the YouTube channel. I've got a Reddit account. I'm really active on Instagram. And so it's a tool. It's a good way to connect to people. It's a lot of fun. Partly it's a business. If I had to give a number, like 25% it's a business, and 75% is just a passion and fun. But and you experience the same thing. Where are you at today? What's your favorite?
As far as platform?
So yeah, social media.
Probably Instagram at the moment. Probably Instagram at the moment.
Yeah, I think the visual aspect is to use that word again, a game changer. Like the first time I got on Instagram, I was completely lost. I was sitting at a Cincinnati Reds baseball stadium, and they put up a thing online that says, hey, put your picture on Instagram and you can win something really, really good. And so sitting in the stadium, I downloaded it, and I didn't know what to do. And this was years ago. But now, today, I think it's a lot of fun. I don't know what's coming next. I know that the kids are doing TikTok. I don't think that's going to be the next for the gun industry, but there's a lot of theorists talking about what's going to be next. We'll see. Mark Cuban made his little foray into it, and that lasted about 6 weeks. That didn't work. Right. So we'll see what's coming next. I will adopt on day one, the first day I hear about it, whatever it is, I will adopt. I think it's a great tool. It's a great way to meet people. And again, I absolutely love social media. I think it's fun.
Well, and that's me too. I mean, I'm an early adopter. I'm always looking for, you know, looking for the next thing. And, you know, we've got some other platforms out there, you know, with a lot of the stuff. I'm sure you probably, maybe you're not aware of the whole, what is this, Crowder, Carlos, whoever his name is from Box, the whole issue with YouTube. Are you aware of that going on right now?
Yeah, I follow that. I've been following that very closely. I follow Steven Crowder every day, as I think most people should at least be peripherally aware of what he's doing.
Right.
Yeah, it's complicated. It's a mess. I don't believe all the theorists. I think everybody is into self-promotion, understandably. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as bad as some people think it is, but I do think it's entertaining.
Right, yeah. Well, I just say that to you know, highlight the drama. It seems like over the last couple of years, anyway, with YouTube, with Facebook. I mean, look at all the times that they've appeared before a congressional committee and all this other stuff. That you know, these giant platforms. Yeah, I mean, they're ultimately they're looking out for number one, and it's about the money.
Yeah, understandably, they're a business and they need to do that. That's how they feed their families.
Right, and you know whether or not that affects us is of course just a byproduct of that. I don't necessarily see it as an explicit bias, but because of that, long way of getting around to my point, which is because of that, I'm always looking for the next thing. And have you played around any at all and looked at any of the pro-gun, pro-Second Amendment platforms, the things like Full 30, GunStreamer, GunTube, stuff like that?
Yeah, I've been on all of them, and I was one of the early guys that was forced onto YouTube when YouTube was a thing, the Utah Gun Exchange. Mm-hmm. Exchange. It was a complete disaster. I didn't get on YouTube. They stole my videos and made a channel for me, and you know, I did a
That was nice of them.
Yeah, it was very nice of them. Really appreciated that. They told me they did that as a courtesy to me. Thanks, dirtbags.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm well aware of Full 30, and we're on there. You know, I'm on there occasionally. I know GunStreamer. You know, it's not going to happen. Guys that are really, really into GunStreamer, I know there's guys going to be listening, they don't want to hear this. It's not going to happen, and it's not going to work. Like, there is not possible to do a video infrastructure and have that be viable. It's not going to work, and nobody who understands the business thinks it's going to be. People are in the dark if they think that Full 30 is going to take off, and it's on one hand it's complicated, but on the other it's not. There's not enough people interested in a single specific topic like the Second Amendment to be able to have it grow and even compete in the same, not even the same ballpark, but on the same continent as YouTube. So it's, I am aware of those things. They're not going to happen.
Yeah. I think they can tread water.
They can have their nice little site, right. But to think you're going to do what Hickok has done, not you personally, but to think you're going to do what Hickok has done on YouTube, do that anywhere else, it's not going to happen.
No, absolutely not.
You can't have a single topic platform to work. And they're going to have instant, like the startup cost of doing video platform is astronomical. Mm-hmm. And tens of millions. And you can't have some guy running a website on his servers or renting servers and on a single server and have it be viable. I know guys don't want to hear that, but guys that are in the business that I talk to and work with on a daily basis, they all know that it's not going to happen. I think, you know, to your point, can they tread water? Sure, they can be open and do a nice little thing and have a nice little website. But is it the answer that we're looking for? Clearly not.
Right. Yeah. Because as a creator, I mean, and even, you know, even going further than that, and even if you say, well, as an advocate, right, an advocate for the Second Amendment, an advocate for the firearm lifestyle, you know, if you're, those are echo chambers is the problem. And, you know, you're right. You're not going to pull the person that the Second Amendment and firearms are maybe just a small portion of their life. Going to be really hard to pull those people over to that platform, because it's like, as you say, it's a one trick pony. And so, you know, as a creator that's looking to broaden that audience, that's looking to pull more people into our tent, you know, that sort of thing, we've got to be looking at the big platforms and at the next best thing, and wherever the masses are at, that's where we're going to have to go. As crappy as the rules of the game may be at some times, we've got to try to play those, I think.
Well, I'm okay with YouTube. Like, I think most of the theories that are out there, because I think your viewers probably know this, but nobody knows anything about YouTube, Instagram, or Facebook's rules and terms of service. They're vague. They're purposely vague. And so most of what we have to do, what we know about YouTube and the rules as they concern an overlap with what we do in the 2A community, it's theory. Like, we don't really know what they believe and what their stance is. Mm-hmm. However, I'm not one of the quote YouTube is against the gun community guys at all. Like, I'm on the other side. I don't think YouTube is anti 2A. I don't think YouTube is anti firearms. I think they're pro cash and pro capitalism.
Right.
So they're obviously not capitalist on some level, but I think partly they are. And they will do whatever it takes to make money. And so you have all these companies that are trying to advertise on YouTube, and they're handed a list. What's, you know, what areas do you want to advertise in? Well, Toyota's not going to want to advertise on some guy shooting targets of Osama bin Laden. Like, they're just not going to associate their product with that, understandably. Mm-hmm. And so you move into a limited advertising category, but I think it's YouTube honoring their advertisers and trying to slice off the biggest piece of the pie they can. I don't think we are specifically targeted, because the gaming community right now is being targeted much more than the 2A community is. So I think it's a YouTube problem or a YouTube situation. I don't think it's specific to us. I love YouTube. I think it's fantastic. They spend a gazillion dollars to host our videos, and it cost us zero. It cost me zero to be on there, and it cost us me zero. In fact, they pay me to be on there a little bit. I don't make a ton, but you make a little bit from the clicks. And then users get to use it for free and access it for free. So I think it's tremendous. Their volunteers they don't have to charge me to do this. So I think it's fantastic. God bless, on some level, YouTube. Clover, you heard it here first, a YouTuber that actually likes YouTube.
Right. Well, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I've got a similar take, I guess. And it's something that aggravates me, because a few years ago, I myself decided to get more serious about this. And part of me getting serious about this was to educate myself, in which I continually, at least one day a week, I have a creators forum type thing that I go into. I don't want to say a class necessarily. And then I've got a group on Facebook, and it's a very diverse group, 1,300, I think, maybe members, well-regulated members. Not a bunch of spammers and stuff like that. And, you know, a very, 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 and I can't say very enough, small percentage are firearm niche. And that gives me kind of a unique perspective, because while the firearm Second Amendment side, even the conservative side, which is a big thing now with Crowder and so forth and so on, want to talk about, you know, censorship and the bias and just all this stuff, and it's real and it's out there. And I'm not going to discount that some of it could be real. It could be. There could be employees, there could be management, executives, whatever, that take their political biases and in some way have affected these big platforms. But by and large, through, first of all, diversity of the types of creators that I interact with, and then researching, looking at those policies, looking at, the theories, I guess, because you are right. We've got ideas about how things work, but that's our best guesses. But people that are way smarter than me on that kind of stuff, kind of looking at their theories on the algorithms and whatnot and educating myself. And I find that a very large percentage, not just a firearm and 2A creators, but just people that are on these platforms in general, they don't even try. They don't at all even skim through or read policy when they get on these platforms. When they get the emails that say they've been updated, they don't go check those out. And they're in the dark. And then when something happens, that's when they point a finger and they go, aha, they're against us. Do you find that potentially any validity in that at all?
Absolutely. I think a couple things. I think it's really healthy that you're hanging out with non-2A creators. They may be pro-2A in their personal lives, but if they're creating, I don't know, guitar videos, I think it's fantastic, because it's healthy for us to be around guys that are not doing what we do. I love that. There's too many guys that bang their fist on the table saying YouTube is so against us. And yeah, I mean, it's complicated, because I don't want your viewers to hear me saying, well, Johnny says YouTube's pro 2A. I would never say that. I just don't think we're specifically targeted. To be fair, I think they probably hate America. Mm-hmm. Maybe they want the downfall of Western civilization more than they want the downfall of the 2A community, possibly. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's a complicated issue. Yeah, I think a lot of guys are uninformed. And I think there's a few channels that have big voices that have done their job to uninform us and just to bang the gavel saying that YouTube's anti-2A, please give me money. Because usually the quote-unquote YouTube is anti-2A, those guys are looking for a handout. They'll immediately say, you've got to give me money so I can fight this. Mm-hmm. And by fight it, all they're doing is uploading another video tomorrow.
Well,
so
go ahead. And regardless of giving them money, drama sells.
drama's fantastic. I mean, Steven Crowder is great. I was trying to define him. Like, what is Steven Crowder? And some guys would say, well, he's a political commentator. No, I don't think he is. I think he is first and foremost a comedian, and or we'll call it an internet-tainer. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, this drama is probably really, really good for his business. I think it's interesting. I think it's fun to watch. I don't know how much it affects us on the day-to-day, but I think we need to keep our eye on it. So, yeah, to your point, yeah, I think a lot of guys are uninformed. I think some guys that they're just not staying current on what YouTube is doing. And I don't even know if the average viewer even cares or average listener even cares about this stuff, all these nuances about YouTube. I think the bottom line is, again, it's free. It's really, really cool to get to talk about and show firearms, and I think it's a great community of a lot of great guys and a few girls.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, want to get your opinion on something, I guess semi-political. There's talk about especially with this, every time we get into an adpocalypse, or every time we get into somebody being banned from a platform, we get into this. You know, well, these platforms walk a fine line, right, between, a publisher and a platform.
Right.
And the rules and regulations and all that, completely different on either one. And they claim that they're one when it best serves their purpose. Of course, again, we've already talked about it. They're in the business to make money at the end of the day. So they're going to do that, right? So you've got a lot of these people that want to complain that there's biases out there, biases, however you say that, and then they'll turn around in the same breath and say the government should regulate it. And
hell no,
I don't want the government, as bad as it may seem. Has the government ever made anything better? Is my question, and the answer to that is no.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the government involvement is not the answer. I think most people, like it's just, we talk out of both sides of our mouth. Like, you're going to have guys that are saying, but YouTube, you know, it's freedom of speech, and they need to welcome all people. But then when the baker doesn't want to make the gay cake, they'll say, there's a private business. He can do what he wants. Like, the same guys are saying the baker should be able to do what he wants. Mm-hmm. As a private business and bake what he wants. And then they'll say YouTube has to open their doors to all people and not do what they want to do. And yeah, I know it's a little more complicated than that, because YouTube has set themselves apart as being primary voice for video creators. And I know, Chris, it's complicated. Again, I don't know if the average viewer cares, but this stuff does affect our day-to-day business as content creators.
Yeah. And I find a large percentage do care, but it's like you say, a large percentage are not told the truth a lot of times either.
Right, they're totally misinformed. Like, I had guys banging their fists on the table yesterday at me online about Olights and the flashlights, and just spewing this misinformation and all this nonsense drama that's actually wrong. And finally, I was like, so you believe everything that you're typing? He is, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, where did you get that? I heard it on the internet. I'm like, well, you know what? I've sat and talked to that guy in person in the last month about what you're talking about. So, yeah, most people are low information, very low information guys. Some of those have the loudest voices, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, that's something I think with – man, that runs through society, right? I mean, it seems like that small percentage. It doesn't matter the movement, the clique, the genre, the race, color, creed, or sexual orientation. It seems like that there's, what, maybe 2 to 3 to maybe 5% of those, I don't know what you would call them, sects or groups or whatever. And it seems like that little bitty percentage always has the loudest voice for some reason.
And they're dumb. That's the bottom line. We talk a lot about YouTube comments, and I think research says that YouTube viewers, only about 1% of them will ever comment, ever. Not even like on a given week or month, but ever. About 1% of people will leave a YouTube comment. And, you know, I had a video that went live just yesterday, and like just tons of comments rolling in. And thankfully, a lot of my viewers are cool. Like I get a troll in there every now and then. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think the idea, to your point, is people are stupid. An individual may be great. An individual may be smart. And one person may be fantastic. But you put everybody in a pen together and shake them up. Yeah, there's a lot of dum-dums out there. I had 300 comments on a video that went live yesterday afternoon, and I've read every single one of them. And yeah, overall, they're fantastic. But yeah, there's some dummies out there spewing some misinformation, and some of those guys are the ones that are the most firm in their beliefs. And you can't, like, I don't argue online. It's not worth it.
Right.
But even if you were to argue online or try to, you know, make a counterpoint, they don't want to hear it. As always, people are not looking for information. They're looking for confirmation, things that confirm what they already believe.
Yeah, bias confirmation. Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I think that media and even in a smaller sense, I guess, mainstream media, and it's not anything new that they prey on the ones less educated or whatever. Think about your local news when the tornado comes through, right? Mountaineer took my roof off, and I was we were in the bathtub down there, and we were praying to God, and that tornado come through, sounded like a freight train.
Every news channel in the nation, like, has the weather guy or weather gal standing outside. Like, if you can stand outside and it's not news, like, stop it. But right. That's what they do. Like, here, I'm in the mountains in East Tennessee, and I know the Colorado folks are going to, like, jump up and down. Calm yourselves down, people. But I'm in the quote-unquote mountains of Appalachia, and we get some snow. Like, I know the Michigan folks are going to say, you don't know what snow is. Well, we get some snow, and if it's going to hit and we're not ready for it, everything shuts down for, you know, a morning or maybe a day, a full day. Like, things will just completely shut down. It's a big deal. Like, businesses shut down and school shuts down. We get about 10 snow days a year at school, five to 10. Mm-hmm. And when it hits, it is days. When there's the word snow in the forecast up in the mountains, because, like, 40 minutes from here, there's some serious mountains. People here go nuts. What do you got to have? Bread, milk, and eggs. Mm-hmm. And people run to the red box, and the red box gets cleared out, and the grocery store is insanity. Mm-hmm. Over sensationalism. And I think we do the same thing on YouTube. Oh my gosh, they've banned my ads. Oh my lord, I've been demonetized. Oh gosh, my videos being hit by YouTube or targeted by YouTube. To your point, it sells. People love drama. It gets the clicks. It gets the Patreon dollars coming in. Like, there's a lot of guys making a lot of money based on panic.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's bring it back around. I want to bring it back around here to your channel. And I want to talk about the name, first of all, because, you know, if it was weird. I mean, the first time that I watched your content, the name didn't actually really fit the content. And I was kind of a late adopter, admittedly, to it. I believe Gun Gossip really was what brought me in more than anything. Where does 182nd Ideas, where does that come from? What was the thinking behind that name?
Back in 16, when I started the channel, knew I was going to start the channel, I'm a Swiss Army knife. Like, guns are not my life. I really, really enjoy them. They're top 10 for me, but I got a lot of things that I'm into. And my original intention was just to create a channel and talk about things that interest me. And I wanted to do short videos, 182nd ideas, and have a different idea for every day. So I named the channel. And not long after that, within a couple months, I had that little Glock 43 video did really well, and Google picked it up. And I think it went to, like, number 2 on Google, like, really, really quickly. And I was like, all right, if it's that easy in the gun world, just talk about guns and people will click on it. I kind of steered that direction pretty quickly. So the original idea was just to talk 3 minutes about all sorts of ideas. And so I used to talk movies and talk about a lot of stuff before the gun stuff hit. And yeah, just like you said, a lot of folks did not meet me until Gun Gossip hit. And so by that point, yeah, the name and Gun Gossip are two totally separate things. I am considering a name change. Like, you're allowed to change your YouTube channel, I believe, once. Mm-hmm. And so I might. I'm gonna do a big assessment on January 1st of 2020. And so one of the things I'm going to be looking at is a complete rebranding. So, yeah, it doesn't fit. John Correa with Active Self-Protection has, I mean, he has hit me hard verbally to get that name change and to really focus the brand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't make sense. I know it doesn't make sense. At this point, it's kind of endearing.
Yeah, but at some point, I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't, you know, because people know you, they understand you, they like the content, you know, the name of the channel. You know,
yeah, it's only confusing the first time. Like, right. I jumped in a chat room the other night, and just instantly a couple guys were like, 182nd Ideas is in the house. And they said it verbally. So on some level, it doesn't matter. There are channels with much dumber names than I have.
Right. A bunch of, just numerals and letters and the stuff that doesn't even make sense, a lot of them.
Yep.
With Gun Gossip, I mean, it's obvious. It's obvious you're into comedy. It's obviously you don't mind poking bears. It's obvious you don't mind picking at scabs. So with Gun Gossip, that's sort of what launched you, I guess, in a way, right?
Yeah, I mean, it took me to a bigger platform. I had done some stuff with the Gun Collective about 6 months before that, and TGC News had me featured a couple times as GunTuber of the Week. And they labeled me, I think, number 9 for 2017, right after number 8, Graham Thumb. So that was quite the honor. So, and that was 100% just gun reviews and just doing my stuff. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, the Gun Gossip really, really opened the doors. I won't say it blew up, but on some level it did. And I've told this story on a couple different podcasts. I uploaded that at 10 p.m. on a Tuesday night, and by 10 a.m. the next day, my phone was buzzing with people saying, oh my gosh, what did you do? And that original video still hasn't even hit 100,000. Like, people would be shocked at that. It hasn't even had 100,000 views, but people in the industry have all watched it. So when I'm walking around the NRA, like owners of firearms companies and other creators are stopping me. When I do live events or meet and greets at booths or a booth appearance, what happens, like last year I did one at Manticore Arms, and 100%, there was a few, I don't like the word fans, but a few viewers showed up, but 9 out of 10 of the people that showed up were other content creators, and I did Facts and Firearms in Indiana, and it was almost all content creators showed up.
Yeah.
So
we ran that booth for a better part of an hour.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And so for me, it's I think pound for pound, I have a pretty big footprint within the creator community. And I just feel really blessed because of that. I mean, it's opened a lot of doors. It's a lot of fun. I meet a lot of people. And so Gun Gossip has been an absolute blast. And I took 9 months off, but season 2 is up and running and having a ball.
Yeah, and you brought in Hill Person Johnny now.
Yeah, we got a new character for season 2, and I went with a little bit of my roots. I thought about a lot of different characters for that, and a lot of bad ideas. I really want to do this like Admiral, with his big Admirals, like a Napoleon hat. But I asked myself, do I want to wear a Napoleon hat for a year for all of season 2? And the answer was no.
Right.
So I'm happy with the Hill Person choices, though it's a little condescending towards my people.
Yeah, but that's the best kind of love, maybe, right?
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, I had a follow up with that. It was in my brain pan, and it just fell out, unfortunately. But you're talking about Gun Gossip. How long? You know, you've got a lot. You've got a, I guess you're pretty well engaged, as you said before, with social media. So finding stuff, the content for the shows, does that prove difficult at times, or is it fairly easy with the drama and everything that goes on?
Well, I mean, I think the show is a little bit misnamed. I like the name. I think it's a great name. I'm glad I chose the name. But it's not really about gossip that's going on. Like, it really isn't. It's more of me finding guys that do dumb stuff on Instagram or Facebook and just making fun of them rather than like real drama and real like infighting. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of infighting that I just 100% ignore. Like I alluded to the Olight thing the other day, and a lot of guys have asked me if I'm going to cover the Olight thing. No, I'm not going to, because I don't want to touch it. I would rather talk about guys. There was a guy this week acting dumb after shooting a belt fed. 1776 Duck is his name. Mm-hmm. And so for me, is it difficult? No, but it's really, really time consuming. The process now is about half the time it used to be. because now I keep a big file going all the time of ideas. And so when it's time to pull a show together, I'm able to dig through that file and find ideas. And for me, I'm just choosing things that make me laugh. I try to have one good one in every episode that I honestly think is funny. And then everything else I just think is a little bit snarky or slightly entertaining. And then you throw it out there. And usually it's the bits. I try to have 7 to 10 bits in every show. And the ones that end up hitting that people really talk to me about are often a surprise to me. So it's not difficult, but boy, it's time consuming.
Yeah. Now, as far as the editing side, once you have all of your, you know, you filmed your, you know, yourself and you've got the clips and you have everything there, seems like there's a lot of editing that goes into that. About what kind of time do you spend on the editing usually?
The old season one episodes took me somewhere between 22 and 26 hours a piece.
Wow.
And I did that every week. I did that every week for 6 months. And people asked me why I needed a break.
Right.
And this is on top. I mean, I have a 9-to-5. I have a full career outside of all this stuff that is important to me and that I actually try in like an adult. So season two, I've got my process a little more streamlined, and I'm just faster. The last thing I do is film myself. That's the absolute easy. By the time I turn the camera on and film myself, the work is really, really done. Mm-hmm. So then I film myself. That takes a couple hours. And then after that, it's about 5 hours to do all the final edits. So I storyboard everything up front. And so after the storyboards are done, I film myself, and then maybe 5 hours, sometimes as much as 8 if I'm having to do animations or anything. But like this week's episode was 5 hours start to finish, and then another solid hour to upload, to go through all that process of tags and titles and getting on the different platforms. So 5-6 hours, but it's a labor of love, Clover.
Sure, yeah. Editing is one thing I absolutely hate, so... mad props and respect if you enjoy doing that stuff, because
I don't think I enjoy it. It's a lot of work, but it's necessary. Like, it's the most important thing I do. I mean, that's really where the thing comes together. Like, you've got to be able to sit down and do that stuff, because the editing is what makes the experience for the viewer better. Like, I go watch my stuff from 2 years ago and just cringe, and I feel sorry for all those people that watched. And because the experience is not what it could be, and I'm trying to level up. There's a couple channels that I am devouring right now, and to learn from them, and I'm always asking questions and watching tutorials. I'm trying to get better, because as a communicator, getting the message out there, the better you get it out there, the more people you're going to reach. For me, I'm trying to bring chuckles and laughs, and it's important to me, and I think it really matters how the editing goes together and creating an experience for the viewers.
Right. Now, before we close out, we're getting up against time. I think it's important. You've got a serious project going on right now with the whole, you know, getting healthy project. You want to talk about that a little bit before we get out of here?
Yeah, on June 1st, I just did it publicly. I decided to make some health decisions. I wasn't in like some big giant crisis. Somebody said, you know, were you pre-diabetic? No, I don't think so. Like, it wasn't the end of the world. I'm height, weight proportionate. They're not rolling me down the sidewalk after I leave the Golden Corral. But like all Southerners, I like food. And like all Southerners, I need to lose 6 pounds. Turns out I need to lose more like 56 pounds. Mm-hmm. And so I did it publicly, and I was really challenged by Ivan Kit Badger, and the Kit Badger channel. Ivan is his name. A lot of folks think his name is Kit, but he challenged me to do it publicly. So that was a little bit embarrassing, as I think you could imagine. Mm-hmm. But it's been really, really good. So on June 1st, I just launched a public journey and decided to just do better. I'm not doing rules. I'm not doing a program. I'm just making decisions so I can be on this planet as long as possible. And the response has been really overwhelming. I said the other day on the channel that I thought maybe 6 guys would join me, and turns out I've got over 300 have signed up. I had like 3 more sign up yesterday. So I've got over 300 guys and a few gals that are doing this with me, and it turns out everybody needs to do more. Some guys want to maintain, some guys want to lose, some guys want to gain weight, and it's not just about weight. It's really, and I talk very little about weight. I like talking about health. It's about walking more and just feeling good. So I think everybody on some level in the two-way communities to do something, because no, maybe not everybody. There's a few guys that are doing fantastic, but most of us are a bunch of fatties. Like, you walk around the NRA, it is a bunch of big old hosses walking around.
Right.
And you've got guys my age on mobile scooters because they're fat. And I know America's in a crisis right now. And, you know, that sounds like I'm being harsh. It's not. I'm not harsh at all. Like I get it. I mean, I 100%, I know what it's like going to my family reunion looking at this bunch of fatties. And it's because food's amazing, Clover. Like, have you ever had Mexican food? It's incredible.
Well, I live in Texas, dude. I have Mexican food just almost every night.
It's amazing. And so right. I totally get it. I sympathize with guys that struggle. A lot of us are working. A lot of the dads, you know, you end up having kids, and all of a sudden you're 15 years later and your knees are hurting and you're, you know, 38 pounds heavier than you were. So for me, it's a lot of encouragement of folks. It's a lot of folks that jumped in here. I still struggle. I had ribs on Friday night. They were in freaking incredible.
Nice.
But you know, I've got a really good plan today at 10 right at 10 o'clock before we jumped on here and did this. I had a spring mix salad, dry, no dressing, just dry lettuce. I know that sounds fantastic, and a little bit of lean chicken as a mid-morning snack. And I'm going to walk a ton today, but I'm also going to sit a ton today. Like, I've got a massive video for Pew Pew Tactical that I'm working on today. That's going to take about 6 to 8 hours of editing, and so I'm going to be mindful to get my behind up and walk.
Right.
And just be active.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think the whole, you know, obesity crisis or weight issue or whatever with the country that's happened over years, you know, I see it as twofold. I mean, number one, the prevalence, commonality, and availability of fast food restaurants, of course.
Which are amazing. God and, bless the fast food. They're so
right,
good.
Right. And Taco Bell's open late, so that's always great. You know, and especially the secret menus, if you've never done that. And then life is just easier for folks as well. You know, there's just not as much.
Yeah, we're not chomping firewood. Like the old, in the old days, like I think most Americans would be shocked to see an ancestor. You can go to Wrigley Field and the seats there, or go to the stadium in Boston, it's Fenway, and the seats there are tiny. Like, people were really, really small. And the average man, you know, 100, 150 years ago was like, I don't know, like 115 pounds, 125 pounds. Mm-hmm. And, like, the human body is not designed for that. But those guys were chopping wood and carrying water and working for a living. And now I work with my mind because I'm so intelligent. And so sitting and editing video is not exactly like, you know, hunting buffalo for a living. So it's a lot of factors. A perfect storm of gluttony has hit us. What does the human body crave? We need fat, we need sugar, and we need salt. And so that's what we've been craving for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. And suddenly Burger King has it in plenty. Of course, biologically, we're going towards that because it's amazing. It's what we need. But we're not running through the jungle away from tigers anymore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mentioned Burger King. And my weakness at Burger King is the cheesy tots, when they release the cheesy tots. I'm not a big Burger King fan until they do that. But when they do that, whoever come up with the idea of, you know, tots with cheese on them, that's great. But whoever come up with the idea of putting the cheese in the tot is a genius.
I think Burger King is outstanding. I know a lot of folks will just die and go, oh, it's so gross. Calm down. Their double cheeseburgers are outstanding. Now, here we've got a place in East Tennessee, and there's going to be maybe a few viewers or listeners are going to like this. There's a place here called Pal's, and I think there's like 30 different restaurants at Pal's. Mm-hmm. And Pal's specialty, Pal's a local, many companies have tried to get Pal's to go national, and Pal's is amazing. It's instant. Like, you pull up, you get your food instantly. Their specialty in the morning is called Cheddar Rounds, and they are tater tots with cheddar cheese inside of them.
Ugh.
And our local Burger King tried to come out with their version. Mm-hmm. And now people are going, we're going to Pal's for Cheddar Rounds. So I love fast food, Clover. I'm trying to do better. I'm on this journey. I have stumbled. I've fallen. I've messed up. But overall, I'm glad I'm doing it. I've met a lot of folks, and I hope to get some of these fatties less fat and get the guys that are trying to maybe gain weight and get stronger. And I don't want to just, again, get hung up just on the metric of weight, because that's too big of a metric.
Right.
I think just health. Like, most guys need to walk more. A friend of mine is a world-class athlete, one of my best friends here. And he's in the gym 7 days a week. He's barely missed a day in 35 years of working out. He's been working out every day since eighth grade. And he's literally a world-class athlete at the age of 45 and in his discipline. And he spends 5 and 6 hours a day some days at the gym. And it's just insane, insane shape. And look, he doesn't struggle in that area, but I think the average guy, the average, especially the average YouTube viewer, because these are guys that, like, my buddy doesn't watch YouTube videos. He watches Kentucky Ballistics because he loves seeing him blow up stuff, and that's it. He watches my stuff like once a year, but he's at the gym. He's not sitting and watching YouTube. So I think the average YouTube viewer, this is probably a good fit, this journey for them. Because we tend to be more computer guys. We tend to be more social guys that like to interact socially online. And where do we interact socially online? Sitting on the couch. I think it's a challenge.
Right. And two, you know, a lot of the content that's out there with the podcast or the live streams or certain things like that, obviously review videos you probably want to be watching, and not a good idea to be walking down the side of the road watching a phone. But you could put the earbuds in on some of these podcasts or live stream interviews or something like that. And go for a walk while you're listening to that. It's a great opportunity for those that view or listen on a regular basis. And I think you hit on something earlier that I know I'm guilty of and a lot of people are guilty of, and that's water. Water is a huge deal. And most people don't get enough water. I don't drink water until I crave water. I don't know if you've ever had the craving for water. But during the summer months here, it happens more often, obviously, than in the cooler months. But I really don't drink water until I'm craving water, and that's bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, I'm not a medical doctor, and I don't want to pretend to be an MD. But research does show that by the time you crave water, you're already in a dehydration crisis. Like, you're in bad shape if you get thirsty. Mm-hmm. And so I've been drinking water for – and somebody was really surprised with this the other day, because they think – because Hill Person Johnny, I've drunk 2 Mountain Dews on camera. And people are like, man, how much Mountain Dew do you drink? I'm like, I've had 2 Mountain Dews on camera and 1 Diet Mountain Dew on camera. Like how often you drink it? That's the only Mountain Dew I've had in the last decade. Right. And so water is my thing. Like I've even during when I'm being unhealthy and eating too much Italian food, I'm still drinking water. It's the first thing I do when I get up in the morning. And I told one of my classes the other day, I said, and I had read this, there was a study that said that the average American has never been hydrated, not once. Like, never been hydrated in their, like, truly hydrated in their entire lives.
Wow.
We wait till we're thirsty. And that's one area. Dude, I think one of the reasons my journey resonated with people is because I'm open about struggling and I'm open about loving fast food. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not even ready to talk about pizza right now. Like, I love it that much. I can't deal right. with that just yet. Right. And I think people identify with that, Clover, because I'm just open. Hey, I love pizza. Rather than some workout dude saying, you got to get swolled up and pumped up like me. I have nothing but salad for the last 12 years.
Right.
But one area, and maybe the only area that I've really done well in the last probably 15 years, is hydration. The first thing I do in the morning is drink water. And so it is rare for me to get thirsty. I drink too much water some days. I think water is amazing, and it helps on my back. Like, I'm 6'5", and I got back issues, mm-hmm. and it makes my back not hurt. And so that's one area I succeed in. Every single other area in this conversation, I'm terrible.
Right. And yeah, and that's like you said. I mean, everybody's got their own thing, and they're going to have their own pitfalls and drawbacks and their own successes. And
cheese.
You got to just find what works for you.
Yeah, it's all about the cheese for me.
The cheese on everything.
Right? Everything.
It doesn't matter. I mean, if Bluebell made some type of cheese ice cream, that would be wonderful.
What's funny is, they do have cheesecake ice cream, so you're halfway there.
Well, cream cheese. Funny, I don't view cream cheese as cheese though.
No, it's in the same universe, but no, it's not cheese. What's funny is, like, you hear people say that they are quote unquote lactose intolerant. Every human on this planet is lactose intolerant. Like, the only reason we're able to eat ice cream mm-hmm. and all this cheese is through sheer stubbornness. We start shoving it down kids' faces when they're when they come off the boob or off the bottle, they're, you know, you're supposed to be done with milk and dairy for the rest of your life. Every other mammal on this planet's done. Mm-hmm. And we just keep shoving cheese and milk into kids' faces, and through sheer stubbornness, our bodies learn to tolerate it. But every single person on this planet is born lactose intolerant, and the only reason you and I can giggle about cheese is through sheer will. We did it. We conquered our bodies.
Right. Evolution has won, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Evolution. We have our de-evolution. We've devolved to the point where we're no longer fighting for survival and hunting and gathering in clans and packs, and now we're driving around like this is embarrassing. I know what the feeling is to want two different fast food restaurants, and so I go get my burger at one place and my fries at another place, and drive through two different fast foods. Like, that is such a fat boy thing to do, and right. I stinking love it.
It's so easy when they're within a block of each other, though.
I mean, they're side by side. And I said the other night on, I don't know whose podcast I was on, but I was talking, they're like, Johnny, what was the big deal for you? I said, the big deal for me was here in my hometown when last summer, when Little Caesars opened. Like, we've got them. Like, I got to go two exits down the interstate to get to Little Caesars. But now I've got one, like, right here in my little podunk town. And, oh, my Lord, Clover, like, it was last spring, last March and April, when I would leave school, because you know I teach, when I would leave school, I have to drive by Little Caesars, and it's like the Krispy Kreme. Like, I don't really care about donuts. Donuts don't do anything for me, mm-hmm. but pizza does, and they got the hot and ready, those little squares, mm-hmm. and so for like the first 90 days they were open, you could get a lunch box,
yeah,
with that pan pizza and a soda for $4, and like, you're like, I'm like, it's a good financial decision. It's a good fun right. decision. It's a good entertainment. It's everything except for my arteries. This is a good day.
Right.
And I would sit, to your point of listening to podcasts, I listened to a ton of stuff, and I would sit out. I did this for months, sit out in my Jeep and listen to my podcast or listen to my books on tape and just sit there and devour pizza. It's amazing. I'm sure the viewers, everybody's probably ready to go eat lunch now.
Yeah, make it. We've already made everybody hungry, I believe, at this point.
It's good. I love eating, and I think part of my health journey is just identifying with everybody who freaking loves food, and it's a challenge.
Right. Now, before we get out of here, I want to bring you in and let you participate in a little something. I've got a Fud Life, one of the CloverTac Fud Life shotgun patches here. If you haven't seen those, you can go over to CloverTac.com, of course, check those out. Buy one there, support the channel if you want, but you're going to get a chance to win one now, and I'm going to let Johnny jump in and help. Johnny, give us a passphrase for the giveaway. Come up with something for us here.
What does that mean, a passphrase for the giveaway? Help me understand.
What I'm gonna do is for the viewers out there that have still listened to this long to the podcast, that email media@clovertac.com and give me whatever passphrase you're about to say. They're going to be entered to win this patch. So it can be.
So it's like the code word
just
to get
unique
entered in.
Code word. Yeah, basically. But make it a phrase. Let's make it a little more difficult.
How about this? Let's do unique for everybody. Or does the computer have to be able to find that phrase specifically, or are you doing it manually?
It'll just be manual. Yeah.
All right. So if you're doing it manual, we can do everybody's going to do their individual. And I want everybody to tell Clover what your current favorite gun is. So it's my favorite gun is blank. And get it in there, and you might be able to get some really cool stuff out of this. So your phrase to get entered in for this patch, which is a really cool patch, it looks fantastic, support the channel, is my favorite gun is
blank. Not blank. Not blank. Well, your favorite gun could be a blank, I guess. That'd be your favorite cartridge, I guess, would be a blank.
My favorite cartridge is a blank.
So, my favorite gun is blank to media@clovertac.com. We'll get you in the running. And, we'll announce the winner of that a week from the date that this podcast is released. So, Johnny, thanks for jumping on, man. I had a great time. Good conversation. Covered a lot of ground. Before we get out of here, do you have anything to plug? Where can people watch you, follow you, stalk you, all that good kind of stuff?
Easiest way to find me is type into the Google, type that in, or into the YouTube. Just type in gun gossip. I'll pop right up, and I'm all through there. The channel does a little bit of guns and a whole lot of comedy. I have fun. It is family friendly, and it really is a lot of fun. I'm also doing pretty regular stuff with pewpewtactical.com and their both their website and their YouTube channel. So I do a lot of serious reviews on pewpewtactical.com. I do a weekly live show on the Gun Collective on their Surplus channel. And so, but the primary way, type in Gun Gossip and prepare for hijinks. And if you hate it, unsubscribe.
You know, we did not, you know, with all the ground we covered, we did not talk about the serious reviews and the other stuff. But yeah, I will echo that. You do some really good work on reviews. So if there are folks out there looking for guns, gears, and other types of gadgets, then yeah, check out, see if Johnny's got a review on that. He does a very good job. Again, Johnny, thanks for coming on. Tell Hill Person we said hey or howdy, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I can do it. I'll be seeing him here in about an hour when I'm outside filming. So yeah, man, thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun. I thought it was a great and interesting conversation. We did cover some ground, and so man, I wish you well on this channel and what all you're doing in media and you and your entire crew. So I mean, you got a lot of guys that you roll that you're pretty tight with. So bless you guys and what y'all are doing. If I can ever help in any way, let me know. And again, thanks for having me on.
Oh, you bet. And we definitely will. And so that'll do it for us on Firearm Friday this week, everybody. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertac.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertac. Have a great weekend.